You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
The music of the stars, summertime. So let's quit complaining. The music of the stars for summer. Live from the Civic Media Radio Network. The music of the stars. Hey, remember that summer? Yeah, that one.
Now we're paying for it.
For as long as we live.
It's been a half life for me, too. Never really fulfilling, never being fulfilled. I'm hungry for everything it hasn't been.
Do you love me? Is it still the same?
Dear God, yes. want to hurt him.
There's a summer place where it may rain or storm, yet I'm safe and warm, for within that summer place your arms reach out to me, and my heart from all care, for it knows there are no gloomy skies when seen through the eyes of those who are blessed with love and the sweet secret of a summer place. Is that it's anywhere when two people share all their hopes, all their dreams, all their
distance.
Look, we're having this big Halloween dance down here, and I was wondering if you could come.
No, I can't, Johnny. Mama won't even let me write to you, let alone see you.
Well, you're not gonna stop.
No, never.
It's awful not seeing you.
It's that way with me too, Johnny.
You know, if I only had something to bank on, I feel lost.
My father and your mother are getting married.
Yeah, I know. They sure deserve each other.
You know, Johnny, when I think about it, I actually get sick. I mean, actually sick to my stomach.
Gee, it's lonely here, Molly. Look, are you going back to Buffalo for Christmas?
Yes.
All right, listen. You know, Dad'd never know if I took a day more to get to Pine Island en route home. Could I come up to Buffalo and meet you?
No, Johnny. Mama'd never let me see you. She hates you. She'd call the police or worse.
Well, gee, isn't there some place? I mean, it seems like almost a year since we...
Yes! There's this big Episcopal church near the station. It has a big gold cross in front. And it's even dark inside, so no one would see us.
All right, I'll be there. December 21st, 9 a.m.
Deposit $2 for 3 minutes, please.
I don't have $2, operator. Could 50 cents give us any longer?
No, sir.
Bye, Johnny, all right.
3 minutes, please.
Here's Sandra Dee.
Fall in love. In a restless world like this is, love is ended before it's begun. And too many moonlight kisses seem to cool in the warmth of the sun. When I give my heart, it will be completely, or I'll never give my heart. And the moment I can feel that, you feel that way too, is when I can feel that, you feel that way too, is when I fall in love with you.
I knew it'd be like this.
Me too.
When did you know?
When I saw you on the cliff, I guess.
Who taught you to kiss so perfectly?
A boy at Buffalo High School. I wasn't supposed to tell you that.
Tell me what?
Mother says that Pine Island girls all go to finishing schools, not plain old high schools. But I loved going there.
Was this boy who taught you your study?
No, he was president of the student body. I was only a sophomore at the time. We used to go up on the roof.
On the roof?
Mm-hmm. It was one of those flat kinds that had a stairway leading up to it. Gee, it got hot up there.
In the daytime, you mean?
Mm-hmm. During my lunch hours.
Here's Troy Donahue. Yeah, that one.
Live young, you're like a butterfly, trying its wings. Love young, and you'll discover such fabulous things. Don't be afraid to give your heart away. Why save your love and kisses for a rainy day? Live young, when all your dreams are so shiny and new. Let loose, do all the swinging things you want to do. Climb up love's ladder to the highest rung. Take that magic carpet ride. Live young. And if someone like me should want to take you kissing, let yourself go and you'll find out what you've been missing. Live young, and let me show you how sweet life can be. Live young, the world's a wonderland, share it with me. Let's start tonight and make a memory, you and me. Let's dream young, love young, live young.
I think that may be the only Troy Donahue song I have. Yeah, it is. The Four Lads. The Music of the Star.
Love is a many splendid thing. It's the April rose that only grows in the early spring. Love is nature's way. Then your fingers touched my silent heart and taught it how to sing. Yes, true love's a many splendored thing.
Francis Webster, Sammy Fain, the classic. The Four Lads, four guys out of Toronto school, and Tony Bennett.
Maybe September I'll love again. Maybe a rainbow will catch me then. This little boy lost will find his way once more. Just like before, when lips were tender, the shade of a willow where love was born. A face on a pillow. I still see that golden world in all its splendor. Maybe September.
Percy Faith wrote that.
Hey, little girl, comb your hair, fix your makeup. Soon he will open the door. Don't think because there's a ring on your finger, you needn't try anymore. For wives should all. And men will always be men. Don't send him off with your hair still in curlers. You may not see him again. For wives should always be lovers too. Run to his arms the moment he comes home to you. He's all.
Beholder shapes the visions that it sees. Someone's eye will see the forest, someone else will see the trees. The eye of the beholder fashions pictures as it must. Someone's eye will see the whirlwind, someone else will see the dust. The eye of the beholder will perceive what it's allowed. Someone's eye will see the people, someone else will see the crowd. The eye of the beholder shapes the beauty or the pain. Someone's eye will see the raindrops, someone else the hurricane. When I see some field of flowers, sunshine, while another sees the heat. One eye sees the city's canyons, while another sees the stream. The eye of the beholder, looking inwardly, will find that its image is reflected in the mirrors of the mind. And the eye that's growing older seeks to find identity in reflections of reflections. Which of them is really me? Which of them is really me? Which of them is really me?
The eye of the beholder shapes the visions that it sees. Someone's eye will see the forest, someone else will see the tree.
Depending who you are, someone's eye will see the darkness, someone else will see the stars.
One eye sees the summer sunshine,
while another sees the heat.
One eye sees the city's canyon,
while another sees the stream.
One eye sees a field of flowers, crying baby.
One eye sees humanity.
The eye of the beholder, looking inwardly, will find that its image is reflected in the mirrors of the mind. And the eye that's growing older seeks to find identity
of reflections. Which of them is really me?
Which of them is really me?
Which of them is really
The United States of America was born in 1776, but it was conceived 169 years before that. The earliest settlers had watered the New World with much sweat. They had built substantial holdings for themselves, for their families. And when the time came to separate themselves from a tyranny an ocean away, at best it meant starting all over again after the ravages of war. Researching what you're about to hear gave a whole new dimension to my reverence for our nation's first citizens. All others of the world's revolutions, before and since, were initiated by men who had nothing to lose. Nothing to lose. Our founders had everything to lose and nothing to gain, except one thing. Hello, Americans. I'm Paul Harvey. You remember the cherry tree fiction. A long time after you have forgotten the more earth-shaking, history-making episodes in the life of George Washington, you have misplaced in your memory the details of Ben Franklin's statesmanship, but you remember his flying a kite. Joyce Kilmer was a great military hero. But the only thing you personally recall about him is his poetic tribute to trees. Maybe of this current decade, that which will be remembered best will not be its wars and its moon rockets or its crumbling frontiers or the giants who lived and died. Maybe all that'll survive to linger in the day-by-day vocabulary of generations yet unborn may be the songs of a Memphis minstrel or the reincarnation of electric automobiles. but for any eve of the 4th of July. I, Paul Harvey, do herewith bequeath unto you something to remember. You may not be able to quote one line from the Declaration of Independence at this moment. Henceforth, you'll always be able to quote at least one line. It's in the last paragraph where you will recall when I remind you, it says, "We mutually pledge to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor." In the Pennsylvania State House that's now called Independence Hall in Philadelphia, the best men from each of the colonies sat down together. This was a very fortunate hour in our nation's history, one of those rare occasions in the lives of men when we had greatness to spare. These were men of means, well-educated, 24 were lawyers and jurists, 9 were farmers, owners of large plantations. On June 11, a committee sat down to draw up a Declaration of Independence. We were going to tell the British fatherland, no more rule by redcoats. Below the dam of ruthless foreign rule, the stream of freedom was running shallow and muddy, and we were going to light a fuse to dynamite that dam. This pact, as Burke later put it, was a partnership between the living and the dead and the yet unborn. There was no bigotry, there was no demagoguery in this group. All had shared hardships. Jefferson finished a draft of the document in 17 days. Congress adopted it in July, and so much is familiar history. But now, King George III had denounced all rebels in America as traitors. Punishment for treason was hanging. The names now so familiar to you from the several signatures on that Declaration of Independence, the names were kept secret for 6 months for each knew the full meaning of that magnificent last paragraph in which his signature pledged his life, his fortune, and his sacred honor. 56 men placed their names beneath that pledge. 56 men knew when they signed that they were risking everything. They knew if they won this fight, the best they could expect would be years of hardship in a struggling nation. And if they lost, they'd face a hangman's rope.
I have come to the conclusion that one useless man is called a disgrace, that two are called a law firm, and that three or more become a Congress. And by God, I have had this Congress. For 10 years, King George and his Parliament have gulled, cullied, and diddled these colonies with their illegal taxes, stamp acts, Townsend acts, sugar acts, tea acts. And when we dared stand up like men, they have stopped our trade, seized our ships, blockaded our ports, burned our towns, and spilled our blood. And still, this Congress refuses to grant any of my proposals on independence, even so much as the courtesy of open debate. Good God, what in hell are you waiting for? Thomas, for God's sake, listen to me. Now listen.
Why not open up a window?
Will you listen to me and forget the window? I say vote yes, vote yes, vote for independence.
Open up a window.
I say vote yes. Vote for independence.
Someone open up a window.
No, no, no. Too many flies, too many flies. What is hot as hell in Philadelphia?
Open up a window.
Can't you compromise here?
Vote yes.
No, too many flies here.
Vote yes.
Oh, for God's sake,
good God consider yourselves fortunate that you have John Adams to abuse, for no sane man would tolerate it.
John, you're a bore. We've heard this before. Now, for God's sake, John, sell.
I say vote yes.
No.
Vote yes.
No.
Vote for independence.
Someone open up a window.
I say vote yes.
Sound, John.
Vote for independence.
Will someone shut that man up?
Never! Never!
Carter Braxton of Virginia, wealthy planter, trader, saw his ships swept from the seas. To pay his debts, he lost his home and all of his properties and died in rags. Thomas Lynch Jr., who signed that pledge, was a third-generation rice grower, aristocrat, large plantation owner. After he signed, his health failed, his wife and he set out for France to regain his failing health. Their ship never got to France, was never heard from again. Thomas McKean of Delaware was so harassed by the enemy that he was forced to move his family 5 times in 5 months. He served in Congress without pay, his family in poverty and in hiding. Vandals looted the properties of Ellery and Clymer and Hall and Gwinnett and Walton and Hayward and Rutledge and Middleton. Thomas Nelson, Jr. of Virginia, raised $2 million on his own signature to provision our allies, the French fleet. After the war, he personally paid back the loans, wiped out his entire estate, and he was never reimbursed by his government. In the final battle for Yorktown, he, Nelson, urged General Washington to fire on his, Nelson's, own home, which was occupied by Cornwallis. It was destroyed. Thomas Nelson, Jr. had pledged his life, his fortune, and his sacred honor. The Hessians seized the home of Francis Hopkinson of New Jersey. Francis Lewis had his home and everything destroyed, his wife imprisoned. She died within a few months. Richard Stockton, who signed that declaration, was captured, mistreated, his health broken to the extent that he died at 51. His estate was pillaged. Thomas Hayward, Jr. was captured when Charleston fell. John Hart was driven from his wife's bedside while she was dying. Their 13 children fled in all directions for their lives. His fields and grist mill were laid waste. For more than a year, he lived in forests and caves and returned home after the war to find his wife dead, his children gone, his properties gone. And he died a few weeks later of exhaustion and a broken heart. Lewis Morris saw his land destroyed, his family scattered. Philip Livingston died within a few months from the hardships of the war. John Hancock, history remembers best due to a quirk of fate rather than anything he stood for, that great sweeping signature attesting to his vanity, towers over the others, one of the wealthiest men in New England. And yet he stood outside Boston one terrible night of the war, and he said, "Burn Boston, though it makes John Hancock a beggar, if the public good requires it." So he, too, lived up to the pledge. Of the 56, few were long to survive. 5 were captured by the British and tortured before they died. 12 had their homes from Rhode Island to Charleston sacked, looted, occupied by the enemy, or burned. 2 lost their sons in the army, 1 had 2 sons captured. 9 of the 56 died in the war from its hardships or from its more merciful bullets. I don't know what impression you had of the men who met that summer in Philadelphia, but I think it's important that we remember this about them. They were not poor men. They were not wild-eyed pirates. These were men of means. They were rich men, most of them, and had enjoyed much ease and luxury in their personal living. Not hungry men, certainly not terrorists, not irresponsible malcontents, not fanatical incendiaries. These men were prosperous men, wealthy landowners. They were substantially secure in their prosperity. They had everything to lose. But they considered liberty, and this is as much as I shall say of it, they had learned that liberty is so much more important than security. that they pledge their lives, their fortunes, and their sacred honor. And they fulfilled their pledge. They paid the price. And freedom was born.
G. Washington.
Johnny and I need some advice.
It's mine to give, it's yours, you know that.
Thank you, Richard, thank you. As you know, the cause that we support has come to a complete standstill. Now, why do you suppose that is?
Simple. Johnny here's obnoxious and disliked.
That's true. Now, what's the solution, I wonder?
Get somebody else in Congress to propose.
Oh, Richard, that's brilliant. Wasn't that brilliant, John?
Brilliant.
Yes. Now, the question remains, who can it be? The man that we need must belong to a delegation publicly committed to support independence. And at the present time, only Massachusetts, New Hampshire, and Delaware have declared our way.
And Virginia. Don't forget Virginia, Benji.
Oh, Richard, I haven't. How could I? But strictly speaking, while Virginia's...
I can hear the echo of 1,000 ringing bells. I can smell the cannons and hear the people's yells. Long live George Washington, their ghostly voices say. And I still feel his spirit to this very day. And I can see a young boy growing straight and tall. And as I watch him hunt and ride, I've no doubt at all. It won't be long till he's full grown, and then will come the day he'll become the president of the USA. Long live George Washington, I hear the people say. He's the first and greatest president of the USA. I see him fighting engines up on his great white horse. I feel the loneliness he felt while steering history's course. He was first in war and first in peace, and he was first again in the hearts of everyone of his countrymen. Long live George Washington, I hear the people say. He's the first and greatest president of the USA. Well, in those days at Valley Forge, he held his men in hand, then crossed the Delaware, and there in Trenton freed this land. He's the father of our country, and to this very day, he's the first and greatest president of the USA. Long live George Washington, I hear the people say. He's the first and greatest president of the USA. Long live George Washington, I hear the people say. He's the first and greatest president of the USA. He's the first and greatest president of the USA.
But words give way to open hostility, and history records that fateful year and the midnight ride of Paul Revere.
All right, there's a signal. Get on the horse, Levine.
That's Revere.
Revere, Levine, just so you ride a horse good. Now get going.
All right. To arms!
The British are coming! The British are coming!
Hey! Who's that making all that racket out there?
It's me, Paul Revere.
Who?
Revere!
I got all the pots and pans I need, sweetie.
But what about the British?
As far as I know, they got all the pots and pans they need, too.
Picture. One rider, one sleeping town, one mission. But that legendary night was about more than just one man. Dr. Warren received word the British were marching northwest to Lexington to capture Sam Adams and Hancock and push through to Concord to destroy the stockpile of Patriot munitions. They would snuff out a rebellion before it could spark a revolution. Someone needed to get there first to warn them. So, they sent for me. To most folks in Boston, I was a silversmith. But to the Sons of Liberty, I was their courier. One with enough experience to ride swiftly and evade the dangers that lie ahead that night. But to be safe, Dr. Warren called upon a Mr. Dawes to take a longer, much safer route through Boston Neck. If one of us was stopped, the other had to get through. The code was simple. One lantern if they marched out by land. Two if they crossed the river by sea. The signal, undetected by the butcher soldiers, but clear to those who needed it. That night, the moon shone bright enough to illuminate the dangers hiding in the shadows.
You there! Stop!
A highwayman along the coach roads I did ride, with sword and pistol by my side. Many a young maid lost her baubles to my trade. Many a soldier shed his lifeblood on my blade. The bastards hung me in the spring of 25, but I am still alive.
I was a sailor, I was born upon the tide. With the sea I did abide. I sailed a schooner around the Horn of Mexico. I went aloft to furl the mainsail in a blow. And when the yards broke off, they said that I got killed. But I'm living still. I was a dam builder across a river deep and wide, where steel and water did collide. A place called Boulder on the Wild Colorado. I slipped and fell into the wet concrete below. They buried me in that gray tomb that knows no sound. But I'm still around. I'll always be around.
And Louie and Keeley. Sam Ivor News.
Now listen, my children, and you all shall hear the story of the midnight bride of Paul Revere. Said to his body, when they start to march, polish up a lantern in the belfry arch. Hang up one if by land, hang up two if by sea. Said Revere, over here on the opposite shore I'll be. Ready to giddy up, giddy up, far and near. Yankee Doodle Derby, winning Mr. Paul Revere. After that lantern flashed, he hit the road, stopping round at every minute man's abode, galloping down each town by heaven's light. Future of a nation riding hard that night. There was no radio flashing news far and wide. Just a man on a horse on a cross-country ride. Ready to giddy-up, giddy-up, far and near. Yankee Doodle Derby winner, Mr. Paul Revere. Giddy-up, giddy-up, giddy-up. Giddy-up, giddy-up, giddy-up. That's the winner, Mr. Paul Revere.
There is a world just beyond now where reality rides a razor-thin seam between fact and possibility, where the laws of the present collide with the crimes of tomorrow. Patrolling these vast outlands is a new breed of lawman, guarding the fringes of society's frontiers. They are known simply as highwaymen. And this is their story.
Hung me in the spring of 25, but I am still alive.
Music of the Stars, stand by for NBC News. Be right back.
I was a sailor. I was born upon the tide, and with the sea I did abide.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.